Blog Talk Radio.
Enough with the theme music. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this beautiful, Wednesday evening? Yeah.
Wednesday, Don. Wednesday here in the great upper Midwest of Twin Cities. Yes, sir. Beautiful, beautiful evening here in our beloved Shangri-La, Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We have a lot. I hear we have a guest that was with us last week, an investigative reporter. She has some new information, I understand, and looks like we're getting some exclusive, if you will. So my colleague, Mr. Allen, has done a nice job of talking with her and encouraging her to make sure that her information and investigation gets out. So we have her. And then, Don, we have a breaking story that was first put on my website yesterday morning here from the Twin Cities, in which we have a serious Department of Justice FBI investigation going on of constitutional and civil rights violations of the rights of police officers in the Minneapolis Police Department, primarily black officers. There are five Pacific black officers. But most importantly is a man who has become really a legend as it pertains to constitutional protection and et cetera, Sergeant Keefe, Michael Keefe, who we talked about him maybe 4 years ago on this program. Dynamite, bombshell kinds of things. And so, yay, let's get it done. By the way, phone lines will be opened at some point in time. We want to hear, particularly when we get into this election situation, because I'm not sure that there may not be a real challenge. But, Mr. Allen, you've been talking with the young lady. Why don't you bring us in, set it up, and let's get to moving.
Yes, we're happy to have ace crack reporter Ms. Priya Samsonar on the line with us from Alpha News, who has been covering investigative reporting, I should say, on Ilhan Omar, the candidate that is running, that kind of unseated Phyllis Khan for the primary for her district over there. And very interesting, but as you know, Mr. Edwards, we left off last week talking about the defense attorney. The defense attorney calling
yes,
back.
Yes, I was so puzzled by that.
I think that's where we should kind of pick it up. Priya, welcome to our show.
Yes, Priya, thank you for being back with us. I appreciate it. Thank you. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Thank you guys very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right then. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
We're solid followers of your anything that you write now, because it's very interesting. Now, our last episode to the tail end of the hour, and I apologize for not being able to go longer, because when we wanted to go longer, we were less than 9 minutes left of the show, and we have to go at 15 minutes. We have to know that we want to go longer, but we're going to pick that up. Now, you had told us that you tried to reach out to the campaign of Ms. Omar, and several folks had, and you got a call back from a defense attorney. Can you kind of go into that for us a little before we go to the story that you just got done publishing?
Yeah, actually, I was not the one to hear back from the defense attorney. Scott Johnson of Powerline, who originally brought this story to light, had contacted Ilhan Omar's campaign with a request for comment based on some of the findings he had in his original story. And they responded with a criminal defense attorney by the name of Gene Brandle, who is located here in Minneapolis. Basically, the response was something along the lines of, people here in Minnesota do not want a small American candidate, and they will use Donald Trump-type tactics in order to bring her down.
Leave Donald out of this, but go ahead. And what took place after?
Fred, you go right ahead and talk about Donald, because that was what was said to Mr. Johnson, as I understand it, and has been and said to you. I mean, we have a national, international audience that's kind of interested in this, because there had been so much publicity about the first Somali that was going to be elected to a legislature in our 50 states, if you will. And so there's a lot of attention being paid. And I notice, if you wouldn't, that there's kind of been a sudden downturn other than what you have been writing, which we commend you. There's been all of a sudden a, you know, turn down and et cetera, and there have been some additional things that have happened. There's emails coming from the UK, the United Kingdom, and et cetera, and I understand you will help us understand that. But go right ahead with your narrative. This is becoming very interesting.
You know, you are right. There has been a downturn, really just a kind of a lull in mainstream media talking about this story. And I think the reason is because there really is no solid government, like, documents that can really tie them together as brother and sister. Any documentation, so you're looking at immigration records or birth records, all of those things are basically sealed. We have tried to request them several times. I have called ICE on multiple occasions, and they basically tell me that none information is available by a Freedom of Information Act request. And so you're kind of just left looking at the social media picture, and that's basically what I've been doing with my past few articles, is really just analyzing the social media aspect of things and really trying to make those connections there, since I cannot obtain those legal documents.
Continue on, Mr. Allen.
Okay.
I'm going to stand aside here, because I have some, and you've really given me some, you know, opportunity for thought. I will have some legal questions for you. So, Mr. Allen, please continue, because I know you have talked to our guests over the last couple of days,
yes,
and I
yes.
know both of you have some reflections that you want to make sure that she's able to make. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, and I would just like to point to Ms. Samsudar's August 26, 2016 article, The Brother, Ilhan Omar, Legally Married, Sends Alpha News an Email. What can you tell us about Ahmed Elam, me, if I pronounce that, the Bison? I mean, what was that about? I saw his branded page that you had on there. He's obviously, from his branded page, a freelance digital creative copywriter, editor, social media. I don't know what that means. Education, you know, Middlesex University, and currently North Dakota State University, and he lists some skills there. And I see a couple emails here and a group picture that's kind of like against a wall somewhere, not necessarily understand. It looks like maybe a church basement or something like that. What can you tell us from those emails that you've extracted to put together this wonderful story?
I can tell you that he got caught in a lie, and he tried to get out of it very poorly. I think he's...
I'm hoping you go there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think what he was trying to do is trying to play it off as, you've just mistaken identity, you've got the wrong person. And then tried to play the race card a little bit, just by saying, do all Somalis look alike? But when you look, and that's one reason we sent the cluster of photos back to him, asking if that was not him. Because mm-hmm. as you can clearly see in the photos, they're identical. I mean, barring some lighting issues, which definitely can be attributed to Instagram filters, barring that, the pictures and the facial structures and physical features are identical of one another. And he later retracted and said, okay, yeah, that is me. That is my Instagram that you are pulling things from. That is my LinkedIn you're pulling things from, but I don't know these people. But that picture was taken with him and Ilhan Omar that you see in one of my articles. That was taken in 2015, last year, actually, during her trip to London. It's at this point we also identified the other brother, whose name is Mohammed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
on Muhammad's Facebook page, it's where he introduced his sister and saying she's running for state representative in the United States next year, being this year. And we've really kind of used social media, again, to really connect the dots and really just use it as an advantage to really either verify or discredit his story. And we've been able to do so, especially once he got into the NDSU questions with him. He gave us a false birthday, and we were able to check with the Office of Records and Registration at NDSU to confirm that there was not a Ahmed Noor Sayed Elmi that attended North Dakota State University in 2005.
Whoa.
But one did attend in 2010 to 2012.
So the not
what
only
if I
was
could ask,
the
I have to, what kind of visa was he in the United States on, if you could, madam? What kind of visa was he on? Because 2010 to 2012, he was allegedly a student. I want to be clear for our audience. And by the way, we will be going an hour and a half. Is that correct, Mr. Allen? Tonight?
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
He's at the University of North Dakota State, which is in Fargo, right? Not to be confused with the University of North Dakota, which is in Grand Forks, right? I'm asking this of the young lady.
Priya? Are you with us, Priya? Let me see here.
Uh-oh.
Priya.
Yeah.
She's still connected.
Well, as we wait to get her back on, you and I can vet what
she
said.
Yeah, she just texted me. She's gonna call right back. She's gonna call right back. Her cell phone dropped the call, and that's understandable.
Oh,
that happens with cell phones.
Sounds like the NSA. But what she was saying to us is that the man who was identified as the brother of Miss Omar, who allegedly she was involved in a marital exercise or ceremony, however you want to call it, apparently at some point indicated that he was in a picture taken in the United Kingdom. And we really want additional clarification from the journalist, if you will, when she reconnects with us. Because when I heard the information 5 days ago about the text messages that he sent from the UK, and then she said early on, right at the very beginning, that he apparently has identified himself as being a student at a institution of higher education in England, if you will. And so I'm trying to figure out, it sounds like she may be trying to get back on. I'm trying to figure out what, and my question is, before we lost her call, the question was, what kind of visa was he on at the time that he attended North Dakota State from 2010 to 2012?
I think that's a very great question, and I wish I could answer it for you. Unfortunately, all of that information is classified by our government. Like I said earlier, I was on the phone with ICE. I've sent ICE multiple emails, and unfortunately, they were not willing to cooperate, and they weren't willing to give any information out.
Well, let me ask this question, because this then leads, and because I am very much a internationalist as it pertains to investigative reporting and et cetera. I mean, is this person a CIA operative? Is he doing certain intelligence work for the American government and now has been relocated back to our England, the UK, as they call it? Was he allowed and brought into the United States to spy on the Somalian community? And the reason I ask that question, Mr. Allinger, is that there was a period of time in which he was here in which the authorities were intensifying their investigation of young Somalis, particularly from Minneapolis, some from Seattle, some from Columbus, maybe even a couple from Portland, Oregon, who were leaving the United States to fight. Initially, it was Al-Qaeda in Syria, if you will, and coming in through Europe and Turkey and et cetera. Now, I got to tell you that to see the kind of resistance that you are receiving, young lady, from ICE, if you will, and actually by extension the State Department, I'm just wondering who this person really is. And I find it interesting that you caught him red-handed giving a – and could you explain that just a tad more? Coming up with a false birthday? Could you explain that a little bit more? How did that happen?
So we were – and, of course, if we had made it a mistake, we definitely would have clarified it, but we knew we hadn't. But we let him know that if we had made a mistake, we'd gladly rectify the situation. But in order for us to do so, we needed to confirm that his story was true. So we asked him to give us a birthday so we could verify our records to make sure that he was telling the truth. And he gave us a birthday in May. Now, on the marriage certificate, Ahmed Nur Sayed Elmi, his birthday is April 4th of 1985. Elmi, the UK Elmi, we'll call him, said that his birthday was in May of 1985. And so we called NDSU's Office of Records and Registration. They aren't able to give you much information. They're just able to confirm that a student went there. And when they were able, or when they attended. And we called and confirmed that an Ahmed Nur Sayed Elmi did attend NDSU from 2010 to 2012, which corresponds with information given both to myself and Powerline. But there is no record of an Ahmed Nur Sayed Elmi attending NDSU in 2005.
Now, how did 205 come in? Because we were talking about 210 to 212. You just said 2005. Now, if you could help us, how did 2005 come into play?
Well, we asked him about he, as you saw on a screenshot that I took, he states that he went to North Dakota State University. We also had found his LinkedIn, and it had stated the same thing. But he removed it before he deleted his LinkedIn profile. And so we asked him when we asked him to confirm that the pictures were the same person. We noted, oh, well, you removed NDSU from your records, stating that you went there. Can you tell us why? And he said, yes, I did go to NDSU. It was spring of 2005. And then he said in parentheses, it was the coldest winter, coldest spring I've ever experienced as a foreign exchange student.
So let me kind of give the narrative here as if I were a CIA interrogator. So now we have him in the United States of America at North Dakota State in 2005. So I know ICE is not cooperating with you. So at what point in your examination of this entire narrative did any evidence emerge of when did this man, whoever he is, now allegedly living in the UK, when did he come into the United States?
I've got Facebook posts from an anonymous source who sent it to me. And one is from September of 2008, where he's making plans to attend a nightclub in London. So we know that he was still in the United Kingdom in September of 2008. It was February of 2009 when he married Ilan Omar.
Well, give us that date again, please. Give us that date again, please.
It's September of 2008.
Okay. Okay.
And then we I found another Facebook post. Where he says that he's moving back to the UK in August, and that was dated April of 2012.
Okay.
Which is a
now,
year.
Now, let me ask you this question, and I think
divorce.
My associate, Mr. Allen, knows just what where I'm going, of course, as a fairly excellent interrogator. Have you checked the no-fly list? For the period of 2003 to 2010?
No, we haven't.
Okay, right. because I'm listening to you give me a narrative, and I know that you would not be careless or irresponsible to pass this information, and of course this is a worldwide broadcast and et cetera, on a man who seems to be able to move freely back and forth between the United States, the UK, and God knows where he goes when he leaves the UK. But I'm a little bit uneasy with regards to that he was in England at a time when another individual, whose supporters know who I'm talking about, was also in the UK after indicating that he had been a refugee in a refugee camp in Kenya, which didn't turn out to be true, and it turned out that he was enjoying a very luxurious life, if you will. And I'm just kind of wondering if we have a bunch of folks here who have been operatives for the American government and have maybe been spying on their own community and clan and tribe, because you have really raised a serious question, particularly for someone that is aware of the international portfolio, if you will, particularly for covert operations. And also, given some of the information that emerged in court testimony during this particular period of time over the last couple of years, as a significant number of young Somalis have been first indicted and are now convicted and are being sentenced, I tell you, that is troubling. Let me just ask you this way. Who do you think this guy really is?
I will say that I do think he is Ilhan Omar's brother. I do not have a motive of why he would need to come to the United States and what the point of committing immigration fraud would be, especially if he was living in the UK. It doesn't make sense to me. Both countries are fair on a very level playing field, I would say, in terms of quality of life. There would be no need to marry your brother to bring him from the UK to the United States. It blows
right,
my mind.
Right, right. My sympathy and understanding completely. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. But in my latest article where I talk about the email sent, I also posted a Instagram photo taken from Ahmed Elmi's Instagram account, which he did confirm that the Instagram account was his in one of our corresponding emails. And it's a picture of Noor Saeed, who we have identified through Facebook posts of Sara Noor and Ilhan Omar, who are sisters, that is their father. And the caption underneath reads, "Father of the ... exclamation point," which in my mind is a play off of Father of the Year. And it really just begs the question, I guess, why is he calling Noor Saeed father a year after their supposed divorce?
Yes, I think that's an excellent narrative. Now, have you posed that question to the gentleman in the UK?
We have not. After we caught him on the NDSU lie, he tried to play it off that he didn't know what was going on and that he was a complete victim in the situation, and basically started rambling off on UK law and media privacy over there, and basically said, "You just need to tell us whether or not you're going to take down my photo or not."
Now, this is he requesting you and attempting to give a kind of veiled threat that you are to take down his photo. Could I ask, where in your professional estimation was the place, and what was the year, and what was the significance of this photo?
Well, the photo posting is dated February 17, 2012. Ilhan Omar, in her last statement, said that she got back together with Ahmed Hirsi, her cultural husband, in 2011. And it looks like they took a picture together in a Starbucks.
Okay. Now, I, you know, for those that may think it's funny, but when one is fairly well versed in intelligence gathering and et cetera, as I am, was this a Starbucks in the United States or a Starbucks in the UK?
It was not stamped with a location, so that I could not tell you.
Okay. All right. Okay. I continue on, because I've cut into to Mr. Allen's time, and additional information and reflections that you wish to share with us tonight.
I also posted another Instagram photo that Ahmed Elmi posted on June 12th of 2012, later that year. That is approximately close to 2 months before he was evicted from his apartment here in Hennepin County, and we have a court record of that, where he says Nisa's fresh out of the, and we won't say what he said next out of respect for your audience. That time, that date stamp actually corresponds with the birthday of Ilhan Omar's youngest daughter, Ilhan.
Okay. Please, though, give us the significance of the youngest daughter and the corresponding date, so that our audience is absolutely clear on what your journalistic observations and possible suspicions were.
In an Instagram post dated 2013 of June, Ilhan Omar posts a collage set of her youngest daughter, Ilhan, wishing her happy first birthday. We know that based on Elmi's own testament, that he didn't move back to the UK until August. That corresponds with court records that we have as well, that was dated July 31st of 2012. He took this picture in June, stating that it was his niece. As far as we know, Sara Noor did not have a child on June 12th of 2012.
Okay. All right. Continue on, please.
I believe between the two photos, we've got conclusive evidence that shows by his own testament that he is related in some faction to Omar. I would say he is their brother, because you don't refer to a man as your father a year after your supposed divorce, and you don't refer to it as your ex-wife's niece or daughter as your niece, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Continue on. Anything else? And Mr. Allen, I mean, just to chip in, I know that you're listening to this CIA type of interrogation. But go ahead, young lady. I mean, this is information, and the public has a right to know.
I think the only last thing that really tipped it off for me was Ahmed Elmi's email address. The thing that struck me the most is that his email address was ahmed.ns.elmi, NS signifying Noor Saeed.
Oh.
And this address would be in the UK?
It was an international email account.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is the email he used to speak with us.
Right. An international account, which means that it is – Mr. Allen is a computer experienced computer person and et cetera. We may have someone calling in a little later on who is an excellent security computer person. See, when you're able to use these international accounts, you could very well – you could very well be sending the particular message and et cetera from Ankara or Beirut. we have no way of knowing if you don't eat, and obviously the federal government is not going to help you out on this. It would take a very sophisticated electronic equipment, satellite provided, if you will, to indicate what the actual point of origin of the email. But I think that you did a nice job of taking note of that. Could you give us that again for our listening audience and for those that are recording these programs? address scenario.
Well, when we looked at his brand me, that would be his portfolio that he had posted online. He had his contact information, both a phone number and an email address. The email address, I feel, was very significant because it was just ahmed.ns.elmi, the NS signifying Noor Saeed, and that matches up with every record that we've got here in the United States that we were legally able to get our hands on.
Okay. I would strongly encourage you as an investigative reporter, I would go back to 2003 up to 2012, 13, where allegedly he has said to you, as a part of his testament, as you point out, that he returned to the UK sometime within that timeline. It'd be interesting to see if anyone with a like name of him is on the no-fly list or has been on the no-fly list, if you will, because one of the things that the government does do is that if they are running you as a covert operative, they will make it appear that you were killed in combat in the conflict in the Middle East, in Syria, or northern Iraq, or, you know, something like that. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? And
yes, sir.
That would allow your name to disappear off of the no-fly list because allegedly you're deceased. So, young lady, I would encourage you to certainly take the time to check the no-fly list. Mr. Allen, do you have anything from your end? Because she has been with us for a half hour, and this is fascinating. And, of course, we will open the phone lines at some point. Anything else, young lady, that you wish to share with the listening audience and some who have been critical of your investigative reporting and the quality of it? I do not share that opinion. You have done, a stellar job of investigating. It'll be interesting to see what opposition in the legislative district will do with this. Mr. Allen, I definitely don't expect him to do a lot because I think there's a whole lot more at play here.
There's a lot
talking
of play.
About.
Yeah, exactly. But if there's not anything else, Mr. Edwards, do you have anything else for her? Because she's back with us.
No. It's just my appreciation for her taking the time.
For real, yeah, we'd like to thank Priya Santhadar for joining us tonight on the Ron and Don Show. And she's with Alpha News, and if I'm not mistaken, it's alphanews.com. Check it out, and you can follow all her stories where she will walk you through what she's told us and more step by step. And, you know, you make your own judgment, but there is something aloof here that, you know, maybe this reporter on the line with us is going to uncover, and maybe people like WCCO and the Star Tribune might get a clue someday. Anyway, Priya, thank you for calling. Thank you for being with us. We greatly appreciate it. And we're going to get an update from you in a couple of weeks, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You for being with
All right.
us. All right. Have a great day.
Yeah.
Yep. You too, guys.
All right.
Bye.
Well,
okay.
Mr. Allen, interesting. I think she has it's not necessary, but I think she has well defended her journalistic integrity and et cetera, because that's part of what we're going to be having tonight on how the system works to destroy the journalistic integrity of issues and stories, investigative reports that the system has gotten caught with its hands in the mud pie, if you will. But let's give out that number, Mr. Allen, and open up the phone lines, and then I would like to then take the opportunity to deal with the other breaking story here in Twin Cities and Minneapolis, St. Paul. But give us the phone number there, Mr. Allen.
Yes, that phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, our call line is 347-426-3904, and the lines are now open.
All right.
Go ahead,
Mr. Allen, I want to take this occasion to update on what is one of the doggone stories and maneuvers that has come out as it pertains to the Washington scene and the scene here in the Twin Cities in a long time. A Minneapolis police officer, a former lieutenant who was demoted to sergeant a couple years ago, who carried out an 8-year battle with the Minneapolis Police Department in their attempt to destroy his credibility and at the same time destroy the credibility of some African-American Minneapolis police officers who, if not for him, back in 2007, 2008, would have probably been indicted for criminal conspiracy, drug trafficking, and everything else, a scenario that was put together by a group of white officers, many of whom were attached to that, at that time to the infamous VOTAC unit, Violent Offenders Task Force, and a couple of other task forces. For the purposes of identification, we call attention to a five-part series in the Minneapolis Star Tribune in April of 2009 by Paul McEnroe, who is no longer with the Star Tribune per se, in which he identified through the auspices of a federal confidential informant by the name of Balachi. We all know at least one or two of his names, who operated here in the Twin City and other places around the country. Again, what we're saying is documented in the Minneapolis Star Tribune five-part series, which talked in terms of the action and conduct of the Minneapolis Police Department, led by its highest officers, to destroy the Black Police Officers Association, which, in fact, it effectively did. There was a settlement, by the way, as an outgrowth of a lawsuit filed by the what was called the Mill City Five. These were officers Arredondo, Adams, Harris, Hamilton, and Edwards. Now, by the way, the Edwards, Lee Edwards, Lieutenant Lee Edwards, now retired, not related to this commentator, if you will, other than we probably, you know, were on the same plantation, if you know what I mean, how things work here in America. But those five were awarded $750,000 in damages in late 2008, if you will, as an outgrowth of a lawsuit that they provided. But in the meanwhile, lieutenant now demoted to sergeant, Michael Keith, was being torn apart, but he stayed the course. Lo and behold, about a year and a half ago, after a district court judge by the name of Poston, who is now retired, she retired about a year and a half ago, unceremoniously and with great violation of his constitutional rights, threw out Mike Keith's case against the city of Minneapolis, the mayor at the particular time that the conspiracy began, R.T. Ryback, who is also the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, and former mayor, 12 years in the city of Minneapolis, Chief Tim Dolan, now retired, and other named individuals. What happened is that after the case was illegally dismissed by a state judge, after in fact being sent back by the federal court, which raised some real suspicions, Lieutenant Keith and his attorneys were able to convince a very powerful constitutional think tank to take up the matter. Lo and behold, Mr. Allen, if they were not able to, in fact, bring this to the attention of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. Very rare.
Ooh.
And the Judiciary Committee, about a year and a half ago, took this matter up for formal examination / investigation and assigned their own investigators to the situation and circumstances here in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul. During that period of time, the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate, with the powers invested in it, notified the Department of Justice that there were some concerns with the preliminary examination of the constitutional violations of Lieutenant, soon to be demoted, by the way, Keith, as well as at least five African-American police officers and a sixth officer who, in fact, as an outgrowth of the conspiracy, was sentenced to 1 year in the federal penitentiary at Leavenworth, Kansas, if you will. That was Officer Mike Roberts, who at the time of this conspiracy was the most senior African-American officer in the Manassas Police Department with 35 years, if you will. I mean, that's all a part of the, you know, the narrative. A number of months ago, the Senate Judiciary Committee forwarded to the Department of Justice Criminal Division and to the notification of the Attorney General of the United States that they had completed their investigation, the same path that they're on in the House as pertains to investigating Hillary Clinton for possible perjury, oops, before the special committee of the House investigating Benghazi and everything else. But in this case, the Senate Judiciary Committee forwarded its investigation of the allegations, legal maneuvers and et cetera, other kinds of specific acts under color of law, and concluded, Mr. Allen, I say again, concluded that the constitutional and civil rights of the individuals, starting with our Lieutenant Keith and five African-American officers, that their constitutional and civil rights, I repeat again, their constitutional rights, had been violated intentionally with malice and forethought. Now, a very broad net has now been cast. We have situations where two of the prosecutors in the case in 2008 received positions of state court judges here in the state of Minnesota. Oops. Others left the Minneapolis Police Department to take on positions at places like the University of Minnesota and et cetera. Okay, now, upon the recommendation under color of law, the criminal division of the Department of Justice has opened a criminal investigation of some very significant political individuals here in the state of Minnesota. And let me, for our listening audience, and then I'll let it go at this point and kind of tantalize people. The Department of Justice has indicated to the city of Minneapolis, the office of the mayor and others, city council, that under Rule 18 of the Federal Criminal Code, oops, that there is reason to believe that there has been a violation of United States Statute 18, and has ordered and asked the Department of Justice to order the FBI into the investigation. The drop-dead date for final opportunity for the city of Minneapolis to correct and remove said officers from their positions of authority and law enforcement has gone and went in the last, let's say, 48 hours, Mr. Allen. There was non-compliance, and consequently, a investigation has been initiated utilizing Rule 18 of the Criminal Code. The Star Tribune was provided with information consistent with what I just talked about here over the last 7 minutes on this program. The Star Tribune declined, as well as WCCO and others, the Rochester Post Bulletin in Rochester, Minnesota, the Duluth News in Duluth, and the St. Paul Pioneer Press, along with the Minneapolis Star Tribune, declined to carry any information whatsoever on this decision by the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate under color of law, and by indicating that Article 18 of the Criminal Code, which is a specific provision that deals with conspiracy, Mr. Allen, that there has been a refusal to deal with that, if you will, as demanded, not requested, but demanded by the Senate Judiciary Committee. So we're breaking that story. We broke it on our website yesterday morning around 3 o'clock in the morning. And we think that this is such an egregious situation. We are not sure that the African-American officers, particularly the five that whose rights were violated, are going to be in a position. As I said, one has just retired from the Mass Police Department. The other four, that'll be up to them. But anyways, this is what has happened. And again, Lieutenant Michael Keefe, demoted to sergeant, has become the hero of the constitutional crowd here across the country.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, we want to always educate our listeners. You know, Rule 18, place of prosecution or trial, and I'm just going to read from the advisory notes from the committee, that was set forth back in 1944. The Constitution of the United States, Article 3, Section 2, Paragraph 3, provides the trial of all crimes except in cases of impeachment shall be by jury, and such trials should be held in the United States where the said crimes have been committed. But when not committed within the state, the trial shall be at such place or places that the Congress may have directed by law. All criminal prosecutions and accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state in the district where the crime has been committed, which the district would have previously ascertained by law. Which means, Mr. Edwards, they're just not going on no breadcrumbs. There has been a crime committed against the Constitution and against these gentlemen. And
yeah.
Rule 18 is pretty serious. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And that's why we broke it and posted it early this afternoon on our website and notifying and did, in fact, actually send word to the Minneapolis Star Tribune that it is our understanding that they are a possible party to the violation of Rule 18. And I appreciate my colleague, Mr. Allen, on his computer, calling up the information, confirming what has been known for quite some time and is a part of some real scurrying that is going on in the Twin Cities as we speak. We're talking about conspiracy. Mr. Allen has articulated it. He has read from the statute, if you will, and it is reopened. It is reopened all aspects of the investigation of the VOTEC unit and the actions that were taken to destroy the Black Police Officers Association, and in fact at one point an attempt made to indict Officers Adams, Arredondo, Hamilton, specifically Lee Edwards, and at that time Lieutenant Harris. This information has been well known in legal circles and et cetera. I repeat again, Mr. Allen, that the two federal prosecutors who were involved and complicit in this, for their reward, received appointments to the state court benches. Their names are in the report, the investigative report done by the Senate Judiciary Committee, an investigation that went on for almost a year.
So, but Mr. Evers, this is something that, you know, I got to bring up and ask you. It's rhetorical, but also tell our listeners. You've been covering this thing since 2007. You have an August 29th, 2007 story, a May 18th, 2011, May 30th, 2012, April 24th, 2014, June 2014, another one, June 18th, 2014, and May 2015. Didn't they know this was coming?
Well, working, unfortunately, as it pertains to my situation as a journalist, working with individuals, institutions, and leadership in our own community, a maneuver was made to slander, if you will, and discredit this journalist and this author of this long investigative report, if you will. And what has happened now that, and particularly what is being examined, was the occasion of my being brought before a federal grand jury in July of 2008. And my testimony on behalf of these individuals and also then patrolman Mike Roberts, who was not able to save him based on advice and et cetera that he received from some people that led to him to be convicted of a charge that wasn't in the original, both indictment and et cetera. But during the course of the examination by yours truly, by the federal prosecutors, there were many questions asked about Lieutenant Keith and at least five African-American officers. As, of course, there were questions asked of me relevant to my knowledge. But what I have found out from the records is that at one point in that period back in 2006 and 2007, when the BALTAC unit, under direct authorization at the highest level in the Mass Police Department, officers Grant Schneider, Officer Pat King, and others involved in the utilization of the informant known as Balachi to put information out first to the federal authorities, pointing the federal authorities towards the African-American officers while white officers continued to carry out very corrupt actions on behalf of themselves and against the interest and the franchise of the African-American community, and particularly the African-American police officers who were being identified as a part of a criminal cartel. And, of course,
wow,
again, in July of 2008, this commentator was examined in front of a federal grand jury. Of course, we began to respond to the questions and et cetera. And the information was ordered sealed. Oops. Because of some of the names of individuals that we were aware of that were a part of the conspiracy to destroy African-American police officers in this city.
Interesting. So let me ask you this, Mr. Edwards. Are there any current people in office or their relations involved in this or will be called maybe possibly for testimony, any that we could speak on or hint to or –
based on what I am hearing from sources in Washington at a significant level, yes, I'm afraid so. And some of this goes to the letters that were sent. Now, I'm not sure of how much of the public record it now is because the official investigation has begun based on these letters being sent to the highest officials in the city of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis City Council, Office of the Mayor, and others, requesting a specific action to remedy, keyword, Mr. Allen, that you have there in front of you, remedy the violation of civil and constitutional rights of the aforementioned individuals, and the city of Minneapolis is been unable to do that, but in the process, once again, the naysayers and et cetera were directed to try to begin their work to suppress what has been basically the only voice here in the Twin Cities that has continuously raised questions. I appreciate that you've gone back and examined the history since 2007 that this corruption is going on.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty deep. Well, I guess we'll hear more about this one time or one day here in the near future because
you know,
very
you're interesting.
Because I'm just shocked. I'm in awe right now. I'm at a loss of words because, again, this proves our point that we talk about all the time, Mr. Edwards. When you write stories and put the information out there, people do kind of slander and they don't read it. They don't take it like I was attacked on social media today, kind of saying that. You know, that I'm attacking the mayor and her husband. I never mentioned the mayor or
what?
Her husband.
Wow.
Yeah. You know,
and
on this particular story.
You, based on what? What did you allegedly say that attacks the mayor, who I've been working very closely with here over the last couple of months, and her husband? I mean, you know, I find that timing interesting when, in fact, yesterday, this columnist posted on my website the fact that this entire narrative case and et cetera had exploded. You started receiving these attacks this afternoon. I think people were anticipating that we were going to talk about this tonight on the Ron and Don program.
Mm-hmm.
What a giveaway.
Yes,
what were they accusing you of rebelling.
Well, you know, I had put the promotion up for the show talking about, you know, there's a federal investigation being launched. And, of course, some of our people, if it's not in the white media, what we say is just, you know, second-tier BS.
Yes,
and
right,
so I
right,
didn't try
right.
to convince them. I didn't try to convince them because, you know, when they see it on KSPP or Carrie 11 or WCCO or the Star Tribune, they sure enough is going to post the link like it's the Bible, like it's the gospel. The
absolutely.
White man is talking to them. This is the truth. We're going to go ahead and post this right away because they said it. When, in fact, you know, we might have broke the story 2 weeks, 5 years, 10 years before it even happened, and the mainstream media is just getting around to post it. And they hardly do a good job at that, as we know, and as a lot of our listeners, our faithful listeners know, who listen all the time. But we have someone to share with us that's been holding for about 20 minutes. And
I
want to see who that is.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Caller, you've been holding for a long time. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Oh, fine, brother.
Wonderful,
Nelson,
sir.
What can we do for you here? A couple
man,
of subjects
just,
that have shown up. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, each topic tonight was riveting indeed. And, you know, let me also be the first to say, you know, listening to, I hate mispronouncing her name. Can you help me, Mr. Allen? How do you say her name? Pema?
Priya.
Yeah, Priya.
Okay, like the car, Priya, okay.
Yeah, or prepaid.
Priya,
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 Priya car.
Priya.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. You know, she and I have gone back and forth on social media about her reporting. I still have a few questions about some of her reporting, but I think I appreciate her doing due diligence and doing some thorough investigating, continuance investigation into whether or not Ms. Omar has committed a crime or committing crimes or individuals involved with her has committed crimes. So I absolutely appreciate that. And then the only place that she could go was right here on the Ron and Don show so that, you know, the African-American community could get the truth. Because, you know, I have no shame in saying at first I thought it was slander. And again, I'll say again, I reiterate, I still have questions. But again, I think that, you know, she did answer a few questions tonight. She made you, you know, think about some things that are going on. I mean, and then again, there are questions still with Elin that I have questions about, things she done while she was the aide to Councilman Johnson and things of that nature.
You're talking about Ms. Omar, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ms. Omar. And so I think that the community, her constituents absolutely have the right to those answers. And I think that hopefully Ms. Priya will continue to, you know, dig and inquire and get the prudent information that is needed. So I appreciate that. Absolutely.
All right, then. Okay.
Appreciate
all right.
That.
Anything else? Anything on this Lieutenant Keith situation?
There's no, you know what? Oh my God! Surprise, surprise! There's a problem in the Minneapolis Police Department. You know, I think that no doubt the African American community, we have always said that there are problems with Minneapolis Police. This just proves it, you know. And then there tend to be cover-ups. this also tends to prove it. Misuse of powers, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is for sure. And so, you know, we have got to demand answers like you guys are doing.
Well, but
for
let me
tonight.
Say this, Mr. Nelson, because of my own, and as Mr. Allen pointed out, I appreciated that. I've been writing and talking about this since 2007 and for a significant period of time at the Spokesman Recorder. Of course, it's now necessary for me to withdraw that story in the future and go directly to my website because of information that has also been provided to me. But I would call upon the city officials and the Minneapolis Star Tribune to release and to publish and respond to the requests that were made to them by the attorneys for Mr. Keith, as well as to request, though I don't think they're going to get it now. I think they knew that when they sat on this story under the Freedom of Information Act, because Mr. Allen has read a portion of Article 18, if you will. And this matter now has what we call gone to ground. And I do believe that the requirement of the legal statutes maintains now the confidentiality and et cetera. The city attorney and the U.S. attorney, by the way, Mr. Allen, maybe will try to make the decision that everything now is confidential and is frozen, restricted, and et cetera. But it will be interesting to see if anybody will make available to those of you in the public the information that was contained in the request from the attorneys by Mr. Keith, Blue Sergeant Keith, if you will, requesting, laying out, and identifying that the facilitator of the initial investigation, which really kind of blew this thing off the top of the watchtower, came from the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate under color of law. And to me, it would seem to be that should be enough to kind of stimulate the need for information and et cetera. I don't think it will happen. It's a dirty narrative. It's been dirty ever since 2006 when conspirators within the police department began to meet and to discuss destroying African-American officers in that department. Again, I would refer people even to the story written by the five-part series by Paul McEnroe and the Star Tribune in April of 2009, if you will. This is a very dirty, dangerous situation that we find ourselves in. And so I just want to say that to the listening audience and to anyone that has any specific questions that I feel that I can answer without violating now the legal covenant that apparently has been initiated as an outgrowth of the parties failing to meet the request of the attorneys for Lieutenant Keith. All right, brother.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Keep the work up.
All right. Take care, my brother. All right. Yeah, Mr. Allen, we got any other calls? Because, as I said before, I was brought before a federal grand jury in July of 2008, and based on the questions examination, it was quite clear to me the depth of the conspiracy in this city and state, by the way. Mr. Nelson did say to the Minneapolis Police Department, but this is actually far beyond the Minneapolis Police Department, and he did say right in the next sentence that then leads to cover-up. And it is scary, Mr. Allen. I cannot impress upon you and our listening audience nationally and internationally how scary it is about what has happened and who has been involved in this entire scenario, if you will, starting officially in 2006. That's how long, and I started writing about it. And appreciate it again, Mr. Allen. I started writing about it in the newspaper of the Spokesman Recorder in 2007. Yeah.
Yep, it sure did. And find that is very interesting. And we do have another caller, Mr. Evans.
All right, let's get
the caller.
We've been talking too much. Let's get the callers. Go right ahead.
Oh, we never talk too much. Hey, caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling?
Gentlemen, this is M. I'm from Minneapolis.
Mr. M. Hey, how you doing, sir?
Yes, Mr. M. Can we help you? What do you have?
Well, I guess right now I've just come back from the freezer. I have to get an ice pack to put on my head after hearing all the I'm trying to revive myself after all the news and all the negative things that are happening in my hometown, which at one time I used to love to refer to as the great city of Minneapolis. But
yes, sir.
I have to kind of temper my words. I mean, we have politicians that are impersonating and have different identities and can't see who they are. We have conspiracies here, conspiracies within the police department. We have pedophiles in the schools. We have, I mean, where does this end? It's one thing to deal with a problem, but when you're hit with a multitude, I mean, these things, they seem like they're just coming like a wave.
You know, I think that's a good narrative slash illustration. It is. It's like a tidal wave of corruption, and vendetta and et cetera, sir. But let me ask you this: any specific question you have of myself or even of Mr. Allen as it pertains to these breaking stories?
Boy, you know, that's like I say, I'm trying to just revive myself and trying to just focus on one thing here. I guess I'm still, you know, I enjoyed the young lady that was on earlier, you know, with her expose on kind of the background or the background story of the identities of, you know, people who are connected to one way or the other, maybe by marriage or cultural marriages or brothers or sisters or whatever the connection is, to try to, you know, just shed light on that. I guess my question would be, I mean, where do we think we are in that situation? I mean, we still see, it just still seems to be a lot of balls juggling in the air with that. I personally feel that there's enough smoke here that I think it should be brought right back to the source. I mean, I have really thing refuting, you know, from the political party or the particular person. I mean, I would think that would be the next step at some time, but I just haven't heard it.
I haven't either, and I said this to Mr. Allen last week at the conclusion of last Wednesday's program, that I was kind of taken back that even Phyllis Kahn and that segment of the Democratic Party had not raised more questions. It kind of reminds me of Hillary Clinton and others being silent on Donald Trump's statements that, you know, that the Democrats haven't served the Negro community very well either, kind of thing. And I, on that particular point, you know, it's bothered me. Now, maybe, you know, based on this program tonight, maybe, you know, we'll get some calls and or someone will demand Mr. Allen equal time. And, we are fully committed, as I understand it, Mr. Allen, to give equal time to their side, if you will. We're not, Brother M, we're not trying to shut anybody out, if you will. I'm most interested in who this person in the UK who apparently came into the country back in 2003, went to the University of North Dakota State in 2005, kind of disappeared, and then came back 5 years later and allegedly spent 2010 through 2012 at the same institution. You know, she was not able to answer the question when I indicated what kind of visa was the individual in 2010 to 2012 on. But I think the reason she couldn't ask it, because ICE is now, ICE, I'm sorry. ICE is now, and do you believe that? The federal government refusing to confirm if a person has been legal in their entry into our country, if you will, attending our institutions and et cetera. And like I said, man, this is something that just kind of makes me a little uneasy, and particularly when a person can't get their birthday right? You know, I'm trying to figure out who this cat is, you know, identifying what's supposed to be his brother, is his father, and vice versa, and et cetera. So I think your observations, Em, are well-grounded. I'd really like to hear something. You know, I'd really like to hear from the Omar camp. These phone lines are open certainly next Wednesday. I just don't think they have enough time for equal response, but the phone lines are open. But I'm like you, sir. I'd like to hear the response. And I'd like for them to make us understand who the individual is in England. Also, what I'd like them to do, Mr. Allen, because you and I had a conversation on this a couple days ago, I'd like to find out who were the Somalians and what clan did they belong to who leaked the initial information that led to this examination by the power group and others. You know, we really didn't get into that, Mr. Allen, but mm-hmm. I hear some real interesting names affiliated with the Somali community and the power base of the Somali community who were the ones that leaked the information about this narrative. And so I just kind of like somebody to just identify who were the Somalis who initially leaked the information, did a very clever thing in the world of espionage, linked it over to the White Power Group, which is comprised of lawyers, which then ultimately led to Omar having to get, because we can only get the answer from about this from her. M, and you heard us talk about it last week. What was the need to get a defense attorney? You would have thought you would have gotten an immigration attorney.
Well, it's, you know, it's as if this is almost becoming like an artichoke, where each layer, each peel back, there's more questions. But I think, Mr. Edwards, you really brought up something in the course of your discussion earlier that really caught my attention, because you kind of mentioned, you know, really a national security issue here.
Yeah,
I mean, and
yeah.
I don't know that the listeners caught that, and I'm, you know, I'm going to tread pretty lightly on that because I certainly don't know, and I certainly am not in any position to accuse anyone. But when you have identities that cannot be identified and people coming and going and you don't know who they are, they say they're one person, and then they begin to create this picture of a trail that there's somebody that they're not. And when you lead to that type of trail, it's usually because they're doing something that they don't want you to know that they're doing. They're trying to cover something.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm just speaking in terms of what ifs now. I have no knowledge of this. But it's just one of those things where there's smoke, there's usually some fire behind it.
Let me say this, and of course these programs can be recaptured on demand. Let me tell you, gentlemen, what immediately caused my antenna to go up. Early on, and actually it was before her cell phone dropped the call, she mentioned a particular institution of higher learning in our England, in the UK. And immediately what caught my attention was a story that broke here a couple of years ago about another Somalian of significant political power who initially had said that he had lived his humble life in a refugee camp in Kenya and et cetera. And then after he, you know, caught the attention of the public as a, you know, as kind of an attractive hero, it was revealed that he, in fact, went to school in England in one of the most prestigious preparatory school there, and that his relatives were not, quote-unquote, nomads, but were, in fact, diplomats. And what happened is that college, or as they call it, that this individual went to, Mr. Allen, is the same one that the reporter identified in the individual that we are talking about in regards to Omar. Oops.
Oh,
I have
cool,
reason
cool,
to
cool,
believe
cool.
that
coincidence?
These individuals were classmates.
Coincidence, maybe? I don't know. You know.
Yeah. I do. I have reason to believe, because of the investigative report that was done 2 years ago as it pertains to who somebody was, that you know, now, you know, is a politician, an elected politician in our beloved enclave. But anyways, that's what we have. So unless we have any other callers holding, Mr. Allman, I mean, anything that you want to pick him on, his observation?
Well, I'm going back through some archives in the studio here while you're talking, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, there's a lot of unexplained incidents that have happened via immigration, via our new residents, and I want to start with the New Year's Day explosion.
Oopsie-daisy on Cedar Avenue, where the top of the building blew off. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and you remember the Star Review, a couple of newspapers, it was a gas explosion, and the gas company says, well, if it was a gas explosion, all that stuff would have blew out into the street, and the people standing, especially the officers standing in the street, would have been injured or killed, possibly killed.
Yes, that's right.
For that. And so I went online, and I looked at many different explosions that were gas explosions and bomb explosions. Now, this was definitely not a gas explosion, and I am not an expert on demolition or pyrotechnics, but you know, I have blown up some things in my time in the military with grenades, and you could see the hole that it puts in the ground and the hole that was over on Cedar Avenue. So there was something going on. And I think that, you know, innocent, not innocent, guilty or not guilty, I think that a representative from Omar campaign needs to explain in detail the connections of just the story from Powerline and Alpha News that they've put out, and walk us through the scenario and answer all these questions. Because one thing the media is not telling us, Ms. Omar is not the only Somalian poised to be the first Somali legislator in the United States. Her opponent is also a Somali. And he's a male conservative. But you don't hear the media talking anything about him, which shows you the bias and lack of objectivity from the Star and Tribune and the mainstream media here in town. And so there's a problem there. Why is one being promoted while the other one is being silenced? And that creates a problem. And one last thing I'd like to add here is that people that listen to us and people that read the newspapers and are addicted to the television, especially the local news, you have to read between the lines, because you are not getting the full breadth of the story and what's happening at that particular time and what's going on. I mean, we have many incidents that have happened in the last couple of weeks that people are running over social media. This happened, that happened, when that's not the case. I saw something funny the other day, Mr. Edwards, you know, not to change the subject too far, but we had talked in the production meeting about the African man that was stabbed by the white man over by the University of Minnesota campus.
Yep.
And someone had posted on Facebook that, you know, well, that's good. These two white guys killing each other. Had no clue what took place, which could have been an international incident if that African man was a diplomat of a son or something like that.
Yes.
You know, and just didn't understand the grasp of that. And this is this political correctness. This is why I like Trump, okay? Because we're getting too nice. We're not mentioning things in the news that we were mentioning 10 years ago to clarify things, and we're leaving too much to the imagination to be polite.
Absolutely. But let me just also say this, and we still have Em with us, because I had received a couple calls prior to us going on the air, and in fact, I was hoping a couple of them I encouraged them to call in from outside the United States. Can either one of you gentlemen tell me, has Hillary Clinton made an announcement of her intention to meet with the president of Mexico? They can talk about Donald Trump, and that's Don Allen from the right. That's his buddy. But I have to give propers to Donald Trump that he was presidential as a candidate, just as Hillary Clinton is just a candidate, by at least going to Mexico and meeting with the president of Mexico. Now I'm hearing liberals and et cetera screaming and hollering about it meant nothing. It wasn't relevant to anything. Donald Trump didn't say what he was supposed to say, and he'll change it tonight, and I guess he's wrapping up his speech and et cetera on immigration. That, you know, I can understand all of that. But why is it that Hillary Clinton has not committed herself to meet with the Mexican president to discuss the problem that Donald Trump did articulate today and on the podium with the Mexican president, the whole thing about drugs? And we as black folks really need to be concerned about the proliferation of drugs and et cetera into our community, into our children and et cetera. And I just was puzzled all day today. I kept listening for representatives of Ms. Clinton indicating that she had indicated that she would meet in the next 8 or 9 days or 10 days with the Mexican president to discuss mutual concerns. Em, is there something that I'm missing here?
What I think is what the, you know, Clinton is doing is she's gone into what I think is a very weak defense mechanism. And what that mechanism is they've tried to poo-poo this visit. They're trying to say, well, now the Mexican people are in arms that that their president would even discuss anything with Trump. Mm-hmm. They're trying to create a backlash that I have no idea whether it's there or not, because it's just coming from them.
Right.
And maybe that is true, but if I'm just hearing it from them, I don't know that. So I think that's what they're trying to say, is that, well, the Mexican people, they don't want anything to do with him. But by doing that, they're sidestepping the issue that you brought out. What is she doing to reach out?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Trump tweeted you're talking about Hillary Clinton visiting places. Donald Trump 2 hours ago just tweeted out on his Twitter page, the real Donald Trump is his handle, Hillary Clinton didn't go to Louisiana, and now she didn't go to Mexico. She doesn't have the drive or stamina to make America great again.
He wasn't supposed to say that, was he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he just smacked her good. So,
I couldn't quite understand why she couldn't go to Louisiana. Was there some waterborne infection or something? Donald Trump kind of what you call a smack up against the head, because I've really been troubled by that. You know, why she could not go to Louisiana.
And then Hillary Clinton shot back and said, Trump failed his first foreign test. Diplomacy isn't easy as it looks. That's what she wrote. I don't know what she's talking about, but this man sat up and said that he's going to build a wall blocking Mexico from the United States. And then he flies down there in his plane, not the taxpayers, and meets with the Mexican president. And they come to some sort of agreement that I'm sure we'll find out about sooner or later. And she says that he does not know anything about diplomacy. That's an oxymoron, backwards, twisted piece of crap if you ever hear about it. You know, if you ever heard it.
I hate to agree to with my associate from the right, M, but I've been waiting all day, right up until 8:31. Tonight on this program, that I would be hearing Hillary Clinton's handlers indicating that she would be meeting with the Mexican president in the next 10 days, particularly in light of the fact that not only, let me say it like this, and we still have about 6 minutes left, and I appreciate him staying with us. The latest casualty figures out of Chicago this weekend.
Oh, geez, yes.
My Lord have mercy. And we're coming up on Labor Day, and we know they really like to do the shooting, particularly in Chicago and et cetera. Another young man shot the whole thing with Dwayne Wade's niece, if you will, that tragedy and et cetera. And we all know, as black men of experience of life, that this drug situation, this murder rampage in Chicago, just as it is here in the Twin Cities, is being driven by control of the dope. Let's just talk like street brothers.
Yeah.
The control of the dope on the streets and the poisoning and proliferation, if you will, and et cetera. And for a candidate for a party that just basically has 98% of our vote guaranteed, wouldn't you think that she may have wanted to meet with the Mexican president and on behalf of us, that 98%, we gonna vote for you, Missy? Don't you think, gentlemen, maybe I'm off him, correct me if I am, but don't you think that would have been a meaningful discussion about dealing with these drugs coming in from Mexico, even though the president said, hey, we're under siege, too, on our southern borders, people coming in through Central America by way of Colombia, who seems to have a fairly, you know, excellent status with us, particularly when she was Secretary of State. Oopsie daisy, I didn't see us taking a lot of sanctions against Colombia. So, I'm Mr. Allen. You stunned me by that posting, because I'm trying to figure out who was not the diplomatic person seasoned, if you will, today in Mexico City. Can you help me out, man? In the last 4 or 5 minutes.
Well, I just see, you know, I see Hillary continuing to backslide, and I think I don't know if it's just you know, the complacency where she knows that she has, you know, at least that the black vote is just in her back pocket already. She doesn't need to do anything. But as
right.
you say, this crime, these murders, and these drug-driven situations in our major cities. And this is all in our major cities. This isn't just – this Chicago is horrible. Minneapolis
yep.
is right behind it. But this is in every major city in this country. This is
yep.
going on in every major city in the United States.
66. They identified on Wolf Blitzer and them today. Some of the white folks just jumped up and waved the information. 66 cities in which better than three-fourths are governed by Democratic mayors. Oops.
But I mean, these things, you know, just be reported. They're in the news. I mean, what more has to happen before someone puts their foot down and wants to do something about this? They want, but you know, it's a whole infrastructure thing, as we've debated and talked about. You know, lack of jobs, lack of opportunities, educational opportunities, and then what do you turn to? I think the drugs.
Right.
I mean,
and you know what? Gentlemen, hang tight. We have a caller. We have 4 minutes left. I'd like to get this last caller in.
All right, go ahead, caller. Yeah, thank you. Quickly.
Caller,
okay.
You are live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I just...
816.
Yeah, I was just calling. You know, I heard your conversation. I agree with most of what you're saying about Hillary Clinton, although I would like to ask you a question. Does it give you any pause at all with Donald Trump about his relationship with the so-called alt-right?
Well, sir, I'll certainly respond very quickly.
Okay.
Definitely. And I'm surprised that the challenge to him on that relationship and particularly what they stand for and a person now closely affiliated with him, I'm a little shocked that Hillary has not been much more aggressive and concise with regards to what it is that she really wants to say about his affiliation. Of course, he's doing everything he can to keep David Duke off of his coattails. I tell you, David Duke reminds me of a guy that wants to marry Donald Trump. You know what I mean? He tied himself to it. But to the caller, yes, sir. I know myself that I'm very concerned about that. And in fact, I was going to ask my co-host that's something we need maybe to delve into a little bit more on next week's program. And hopefully, sir, you and others would get to us a little bit earlier. Though we've certainly been rapping. But yes, I'm concerned. Now let me say this to you: if there are some specifics that you want to ask us on and reflect on, we would certainly be amenable to hearing that. But to your specific question, I think to all three of us, yes, we're concerned. We're really concerned about this right-wing extremist group of covert Ku Klux Klansmen, white nationalists, and et cetera. I know I am.
And I know don't have a whole lot.
Are you saying that Hillary Clinton doesn't have a following of Ku Klux Klan folks or that kind of alt left folks?
Oh, I'm sure she does. I mean, I think a lot of
if Donald Trump is elected, we know that he's not a member of the Ku Klux Klan, but we have elected many presidents that were members of the Ku Klux Klan, and we seem to do pretty good.
Members of the Democratic Party. But to our caller, we have about a minute and a half left. You were getting ready to ask another question of us, sir. We have about 2 minutes left.
Also, another thing about Trump, too, is what do you think of his connection with Vladimir Putin in Russia and all the hacks that have been going on with the Democratic Party? Mm. It seems like they've been hacking the Democratic Party quite a bit, and you know, Hillary Clinton has a lot of this to herself as far as the emails go. But do you think Vladimir Putin is trying to push this election in a particular direction?
I think, sir, I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for the other two gentlemen, including my colleague. There's no doubt in my mind that Vladimir Putin is right in the middle of American politics. But then we have to understand as Americans that that's not anything new, because the United States of America has interfered in a lot of Democratic elections. Over time and history. In fact, it's one of the reasons for the strained relationship between ourselves and the Iranians. Vladimir Putin, I have to say this, is a very shrewd individual. He's a thinker.
Yeah.
And you got to remember,
yeah,
he was a former KGB officer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, gentlemen, go ahead, Mr. Allen. Basically, wrap us. We're down to what?
Yes.
1 minute? Yeah.
Not even 1 minute, 2 seconds. Thanks for listening. We'll be back.
All right. Take care. Thank you, Em. All right. Take care.
All right.